Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. This is your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, reporting to you today from the road, away from my ensconced office, somewhere deep in the Jersey Shore, where in the summertime it's beautiful, and in the wintertime, you wish it was summertime. Well, let's see. I have a lot of notes here, and I guess it's kind of a serious day. So I think I'll start off by telling you where I've been traveling, what I've been doing. You know, with the world coming back together, it's been there have been opportunities now to get back out into the world, to see people, to do business, to try and help people. As many of you know, I teach law enforcement officers. I do training for police officers live in person at police academies, in police departments. I also do a lot of stuff online now. Because of the pandemic, we've had to change the way we do business, and we couldn't get together, so we now have a complete online training situation. I train schools as well, business people, religious facilities, and summer camps, right? Of all things, you would think summer camps. Why, you know, summer camps, what training do they need for safety and security? But all these kind of things is what I do, and the ability to get together has been growing over time. It's getting better and better. You know, New Jersey, for the most part, has dropped its mask mandate. If you want to wear a mask, if you're still scared and you're worried, go ahead, wear a mask. I would suggest that you wear a good one that actually does some protection as opposed to the paper mask that does nothing. That's really just symbolism. You know, that's either you showing that, you know, you are conforming and you're wearing your mask, or you really don't understand that those paper masks do not provide any protection from coronavirus. The virus is so small, it gets right through those. You need an N95 or something better. But I don't want to go on and on and on and on and on about the masks. We're going to talk about corona later in this episode. But what I do see going on is a lot of craziness in the world, and the opportunity to get together with other people has been refreshing. I see that most people I come across are ready to get back together again. They are happy to be out in the world. They either are vaccinated or they're not vaccinated, and they're feeling safer. You know, corona is still out there. It's still a danger. You could still get it. It could still kill you. There's no doubt about it. It's a dangerous virus, but, you know, so is the regular flu. We usually normally lose 60,000 people to the flu, so we have to stay healthy, be smart, do the right thing in life. You know, wash your hands, watch the contact that you do, all those kind of things. So where I was recently is I went to the great city of Atlantic City, New Jersey. And you say, gee, isn't that like the tarnished apple of the Jersey Shore now? Well, I suppose in some ways it is. In other ways, it's nice. Here's the problem, and I've told this story before. My wife and I and friends, we like to go out and go to dinner and do some things and have fun. And we usually go to Manhattan. Well, you can't really go to Manhattan now. They did just stop the vaccine mandates and showing passports and showing all that kind of nonsense. But it's not safe in the city. You can't walk around like you used to. You know, you used to be able to go to the city and have a wonderful time, go to restaurants, go to a show, walk around, enjoy a nice cigar, some adult beverages if you wanted to. Now you can't really. You have to be very, very careful. And bringing my wife to the city is not something I'm really keen on doing. Unlike most people, you know, I am a retired law enforcement officer, so I'm permitted to carry a weapon. But you know what? I don't want to have to use my weapon. And when you put yourself in a position where you're going into a place where people are getting robbed, raped, pushed off of train cars and everything else, even in the middle of the day, that puts you in a position where you may have to do something to protect yourself. And I don't really want to do that. So going to the city is not fun. So recently, I'm on this trip to Atlantic City for what? Because there's the Tri-State Area Camp Conference. And a camp, like going camping, out in the woods, pitch a tent, you know, make a fire, that kind of thing. So it was a huge event for all of these camps from all over the United States that do summer camps. Summer camps have been shut down for 2 years for the better part of last year, and certainly the year before, they were pretty much non-existent. And these kids do this. They go there. They go to, people send their kids away for camp. It's a nice getaway for some, a lot of times for kids who live in a city environment. But even kids that live in the shore, like I do, there's kids that go to camp because there's things to do every day. You know, we all talk about, you know, having time off and remembering fondly when you were a kid. You had the summer and it just seemed endless and you had fun. You did something. Well, that's not everybody. Today's kids are different. You know, I grew up at the shore and my house was about 5 miles from the beach and the boardwalk where all the rides and the arcades and everything were. But as kids, even at 10 years old, we would jump on our bicycles and we would ride to the boardwalk every single day. We would go to the beach, we would swim, then we would hang out and have lunch and hang out in the afternoon, hang out with our friends. At 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, that's what you did. When you got to be a teenager, you absolutely did it. And then you got a car, you drive yourself around. You know, you could do stuff. And the summer, we had things to do. We played sports, we went outside, we hiked in the woods. You know, we did all those kind of things. Today's kids, not so much. I mean, my kids were normal, healthy, red-blooded American kids, and they didn't ride bikes anywhere. We bought them bikes, and they rode up and down the street a little bit, and that was the end of that. They didn't really ride to the boardwalk. The world had changed enough where, you know, my wife Kathleen and I, we were not helicopter parents on top of them every minute, but I got to tell you, we were much more concerned about our kids' safety than my parents were. You know, my parents, we had BB guns, motorcycles, and bicycles at 10 and 11 years old, and off we went for the summer. You know, see you later. We'd be home at night for dinner. And everybody had, you know, pretty much survived all of that and thrived. When it came to my kids, the idea of them, you know, riding a bike and disappearing at 10, 12 years old was not something we were comfortable with. The world had seemed to change enough that prevented us from doing it. And we were pretty relaxed people, actually. But the whole idea also was I didn't want my kids to get hurt. You know, Kathleen didn't want somebody to get hit with riding a bike, you know, all the way to the boardwalk. It's easier just to drive in there, drop them off, and pick them up again later. And of course, we all know there were much more restrictive people that were on top of their kids like every minute. I wouldn't mind dropping my kids off and letting them have their day and then picking them back up. It was the transportation to and from, which I guess really bothered us, which is probably why they didn't ride bikes all over the place. You know, plus they had different things to do. When I was a kid, you know, you did one sport a year. You know, you did whatever you did in school, you know, whatever school sports were doing. But like to be on a team, you picked one sport that you wanted to play, and that's what you did. Football, baseball, soccer, whatever it was. That was the sport you did. You didn't do like sport after sport after sport. Like now these kids are three-season sport kids. That's what they all want, three seasons. When football's over, then you'll play baseball. When baseball's over, you'll play soccer or track or something, right? That was not the way things were back in the day. You were a one-sport kind of kid, and you did that. And if your parents didn't have a lot of dough, you didn't go on a traveling team. You did a recreation team, you know? So we had things to do. These kids today, you know, my kids' lives were managed constantly. They had multiple sports. They had multiple activities. They had planned get-togethers with their friends. It was a different world, and we see that. And this camp show is really about these camps getting back open again. See, I went around in a big circle there, but to bring you back to this show. So all of these camp companies were there, and a lot of them are family-owned. A lot of them are religious, a lot of Jewish camps, a lot of Christian camps were there. And the kids will go there for the summer, and it's freedom, and they can boat, and they can hike, and they do all kinds of things. It's really amazing. So the reason I went there with a sister company that we're in here that sells equipment. You know, they do cameras, surveillance cameras for safety and security. They do visitor management stuff. The virtual guarding, which is a brand new thing. I don't know if you ever heard of this. This is an amazing thing. You know, for any of you out there that have businesses and you need security guards, car lots, construction sites, any of those kind of things, you know, you got to pay personnel, people. And in this modern world, the pay rates, while they're very low for the individual, they're very high for companies. You know, we got to pay, you know, $15, $20 an hour for security personnel, and you need 10 of them. You start to look at, that's a lot of money, $200 an hour for a whole shift. That's $2,000 a day. You know, I'm not going to go into the numbers, but you can imagine it can get very expensive for a business. And you got to remember that the weakest link in anything is usually always the people. You know, people are the weakest link because they have lots of different personality traits. They have different things that affect them. So you have security guards, and it's costing you a lot of money. So this virtual guarding thing, what they do is they use cameras that have a connection to an artificial intelligence. And the artificial intelligence watches your property. And if there's anything that triggers an event, is what they call it. So say somebody drives onto your car lot, or somebody pulls into the parking lot of your business, or somebody walks, hops a fence, whatever. As soon as the camera sees it, because it has artificial intelligence in it, it sees that there's movement, it locks into it, and it sends the video, it records the situation, whatever's happening, and it sends it to a central station where there are trained, professional security personnel. They get an alert, they look at the camera, they see the event, and they can make a decision. Is that a deer that just stepped onto the property out of the woods, or is that a person? Is that a car? Once they see who it is, they can activate cameras, they can activate lights, they can turn stuff on, they can say, hey, this is, business is closed, leave. They can call the police. And they never, the security personnel, they never fall asleep. They never are in the wrong place at the wrong time. They're never at one side of the lot while the other side's getting torn apart, that kind of thing. So really amazing. So that's what this other company does. Well, while I was there, I met so many really wonderful people that are concerned about these kids. Now, of course, they're concerned about their business has been closed for 2 years, but they really are concerned about these kids, and they love what they do. I mean, really amazing. They love what they do, having the camp and having all the kids there and doing the activities. Just really absolutely amazing and wonderful. So that's what I was there for, and we were offering, I do de-escalation training, which is like a buzzword now for every organization needs to train their staff in de-escalation techniques. I'm an FBI-trained hostage crisis negotiator. That's what I did when I was in law enforcement, part of my one of my many duties there. And when I left law enforcement, I went to the schools as a security director. I saw that the schools have a lot of instances where parents will lose their minds, scream and holler. Kids will flip desks over, yell and scream. Staff members can have problematic days, right? And I would say, well, what do we do? How do you calm these people down? And they're like, well, we do the best we can, and sometimes we call the police, and sometimes we do this. And I said, there's got to be a better way. So I created a program to train everybody in my district, and it was pretty big district, called Crisis in the Classroom. And basically, it is a de-escalation program for school personnel. Well, then I created one for business because, you know, businesses have problems too. And then religious facilities. You know, you get people that wander in, people that want to argue, you get protesters. And how do you calm people down? So that's what I was offering to the camp personnel. And it was interesting, the conversations I was having. Is I put up a sign. You know, you have to have some kind of signage when you want to ask a question. Sometimes we ask a basic question, right, to get an answer. So the sign that I put up was, is your camp safe? Pretty basic question. Is your camp safe? And there were thousands of people at this event. I couldn't believe how many people were at this event. And people would walk by, and you know, you don't accost people. Some of the salespeople do. When you see some of these trade shows, they jump out of there grabbing at you. Hey, come here and look at my stuff. And I don't do that. I'm not about that. You know, I'm here to help you stay safe. If you don't think you're safe, I can help you be safe. I can provide you training. I can do things to help you be safe. But so I would just let people look at it, and people would look at the sign, and sometimes they just stopped, and they're like, well, I think my camp is safe. I'm like, well, let me ask you, have you had a threat assessment done? Do you know, is it safe? Do you train your staff in active shooter response? Do you train your, and they were shocked by this. They're like, active shooters at summer camp? I said, listen, who does the shootings in our schools? Mostly it's the insider threat, which means that's either a student or a staff member, usually a student, that is already in your building. That's who's shooting us in schools. Who shoots you in your businesses? It's very rare that a person comes from the outside that has nothing to do with your business and shows up and shoots up your place. It's usually a current or former employee that attacks you. You know, those kind of things. So I said, the kids that are in school that are problematic, that can hurt us, are the same kids that you have in your camp. So you need to be prepared. Your staff needs to be prepared on what to do if one of these kids, you know, decides they're going to attack everyone. And the attack doesn't have to be because they hate the camp or because they hate the kids or the counselors. It's because the kid might have some other kind of problem. And taking it out in violence against the people that they're with is what happens. Now, when we see it in schools, there are no profiles of a school shooter or a workplace shooter. There's no profile you can say, oh, here's the profile. This person fits that profile. But we do see similarities in many of our shooters. And the number one similarity that we see is that the student or the person that does the shooting at school or work, they feel disconnected from the workplace or the school somehow. They don't feel connected to their classmates. They don't feel a part of the school. They feel left out. They feel that they're not like, you know, rah rah, let's go Cougars. You know, they don't feel that connected to the school. And sometimes if they have anger or mental health issue problems or other problems at home, they strike out at school. They take it out on the people around them. Same thing at these businesses. So what I would explain to them is, listen, the kids that you have in schools that are potentially dangerous are the same kids that you have in your camp. So your staff needs to be prepared what to do. But one thing, you know, a school is usually in an area where police patrol it regularly, or you have all kinds of equipment to call for help. When you're at a camp, you know, so you're in a rural area usually. You're far away. These camps are 500-600 acres. They're not, 50 acres of a school. So you have to be prepared. You have to train your staff. You have to have communications equipment. So when I would have that conversation with them, they would say, wow, this is something we never really thought of. And I would say, out of the, how many people did we speak to? I mean, there was thousands there. But we probably had 100 people stop by the booth when they saw the sign or to ask what we do and they saw the equipment or whatever. And out of that 100, I would say 60 of them would say, gee, we never really considered safety. We never really thought about it like that. We never thought about an active shooter at our camp or violence coming to our camp. The other 40% would say, yeah, we have thought about it. We're not really sure what to do about it. And that's where I could help them. And then there was a group of people that would come from different camps and say, oh yeah, we're well aware of it and we do the right thing. We've been trained, we have threat assessed, all that kind of stuff. So it was interesting to get out into the world with people again, is my point, and go see what was going on out there when it comes to safety and security as the world starts to gear up. So I'm going to point that out to all of you out there. If you have children or grandchildren or nieces and nephew that are going to go to camp, you really want to ask the camp about safety and security. There's a big camp in New York, the Ousden camp, a beautiful facility, absolutely gorgeous facility on Long Island. And I went in and I did a threat assessment for them, and we worked with them, we trained everybody. It is a very, very safe camp. It's a really nice place. But the owners and the management really took it seriously. They were concerned. And one of the main reasons they were concerned and did stuff is because the parents, you know, parents in this area, New York, you know, we know that there's potential for violence. They went to the camp and said, hey, what do you do to keep my kids safe? What do you do to make sure you can call for help? Do you have first aid on? Are your people trained? That kind of thing. And that's why they reached out to us. So if you have children going to camp, or grandchildren, or nieces, nephews, friends, kids, whatever, you should make sure you check with the camp to make sure they do something. Make sure they're aware of it. Make sure they have some kind of plan in place, that they work with their local police. They don't have to call me. They should call somebody and get an assessment done, check out their property, get the right equipment there, make sure that they can keep people safe if anything should happen. So that was interesting. Now, the other part of being down in Atlantic City, and I think I mentioned this to you a couple of episodes ago going back, is that Atlantic City had great promise when it was first rejuvenated back in the late 1970s, and they got gambling. You know, they're going to put all these casinos in, and they were going to do this gambling. And one of the deals at the time that was made between the politicians and the casinos that were going to come in is that they were going to have a lot of money floating around that was going to be used for the local community. You know, to gentrify the local communities, upgrade the schools, upgrade the streets, upgrade the housing for everyone. Because there's a lot of impoverished people that live in the area of Atlantic City. It's one of those kind of cities that used to be a shining jewel, and then it got kind of tarnished over the years, kind of fell apart, all based on how it's run. You know, it's run like a mess, like many of our cities. So the whole idea was that we're going to have a lot of this cash and really make the city a shining jewel again. You know, Miss America used to be here all the time. Well, what they did is they put in all these casinos, and the casinos, Casino Row was beautiful, but you could go two blocks outside of Casino Row and you could get your head handed to you, literally robbed, beaten, raped, whatever. It was not a safe place. And over the years, it never really caught on as big as it could have. It's kind of shocking to think that, you know, when you go into these casinos, they are magnificent facilities. They're absolutely beautiful. Some much better than others. Absolutely. Some are old and outdated. When they knocked off the smoking, that's pretty good. There's no smoking in these places anymore, so you can go in and enjoy yourself if you're a non-smoker. You're not choking to death. But the problem that Atlantic City has is that when you go there, because they're struggling so hard to make money, is that they cut your throat for every nickel and dime they get out of you. You know what I mean? Everything you do, it has a cost to it. And it's not like going to Florida or going to some beautiful resort in California or something. You're in New Jersey, okay? Let's face it, I love my state, but it's New Jersey. And you have 2 months of nice weather and 10 months of crap weather here. So it's not like it's a destination where you're going to go, oh, this is fantastic, like going to Miami or going to Tampa or something in Florida. So the experiences that we always had, Kathleen and I, when we came down, was that the hotel was nice but ridiculously expensive. If you wanted a drink, they charge you $15 for a watered-down drink, right? Now, who wants to spend $15 for a watered-down drink? It's just not fun. You feel like you're being taken advantage of. And then you go to eat, and you'd get a hamburger, and they want $20 for a hamburger, and the fries are extra, and lettuce and tomato is extra. So it's like everything they do, every place you want to park is $25. You know, it just, you felt like you were taken advantage of completely, and people didn't want to come down. You know, you came down, it was all the smoking, it was ridiculous expensive, and you had to say to yourself, it isn't a beautiful resort area, you know? So it kind of foundered, and it's not doing well. Other places now have gambling. We see gambling in other states, other places doing much better. But they do a lot of conventions down here because the gambling is a draw. You know, people that go to the conventions, if they have it in the hotel, it's a way to get away. That's what most of these trade shows really are for whatever groups they are. They get away for a couple days, they get away from work for a couple days, they stay in a nice hotel, they can gamble, they have food, they drink with their coworkers, and then they go to the trade show and maybe there's some information programs that they can learn about their job or whatever it is. Like the teachers go. Teachers learn about teaching stuff, new styles to teach, whatever. Law enforcement comes down to see new equipment and new tactics and stuff like that. So they have a place, these trade shows, but they come to Atlantic City because it's, you know, for the local place, it's, they got these big hotels, long and short of it. Well, I felt so ripped off. I don't come down here for fun. You know, even if you come down for a concert, you just feel like they're just taking advantage. Like I've been to Las Vegas and I don't feel like I'm taken advantage of in Las Vegas because it's a beautiful destination place. The weather is nice. The hotels are nice. You know, it just feels completely different. You don't mind spending money down there when you're in Las Vegas as opposed to Atlantic City. And I feel bad for that because it could be really a great place. Well, I have to tell you, the company booked us in to the Ocean Resort. That's what it's called, Ocean Resort. It used to be a hotel called the Revel, and now it's called Ocean Resort. I can report that I was absolutely shocked with how nice the hotel was, how easy it was to park. Some of these places have these parking edifices that are so big, it takes you 20 minutes to get from your car to get to the hotel elevators. Then when you get to the hotel, of course, the only place to get off to get to the lobby so you can check in is to go through the casinos. I mean, they design these things so that you have to walk through the casino and you see the machines and the lights and you want to place them before you even get into the hotel. They want you dumping your dollars. So they design them that way. And it can be really annoying. It could be a very, very far walk. You could be going for 20 minutes to a half an hour just to get to the lobby to get your room so that you can go put your stuff away. It's a pain in the neck, you know, what you do. Well, they booked us into the Ocean Resort. It is the last resort on the boardwalk. It's at the most north end of the city. And first of all, the rooms and the whole building has been redone. It is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, really, a beautiful, beautiful building. And I was very, very pleased by that. I said, okay. The people that work there were so nice. I couldn't believe how nice they were. You know, you don't always get nice people working at places. They don't care about you. They're making minimum wage. They don't like their boss. They don't like to have to work what they do. And they, you know, the people are tough. It's tough to work with people. Believe me, it's tough to work with people. You know, if you ever worked in retail, and I'm sure many of you have, you know what I'm talking about. Even me, even nice Lieutenant Joe, I was frustrated. When I first got there, I was annoyed. I was carrying all this stuff I had to bring for the trade show. I had to get checked into my room. I had driven a long way. I was tired, right? I was tired dragging all this stuff out of my car, trying to get it. Now, they sent me a really nice text message on my phone. Click this button to register for your room, and then you just go to a kiosk and you punch in whatever code they give you, and your keys drop out. How easy is that? Instead of waiting, you ever see these long lines, these monster lines you got to wait on for 2 hours to get registered for your room? How nice is that? And I've done this before down in Atlantic City. It's simple. You fill in your information, you click a button, you get to the kiosk, there's your keys, and off you go to your room. Great. Very nice. Well, I got one of those. And I'm trying for a half an hour to get the app to work. Now, my partner that was here, it worked for him. He was all registered in, got his keys. I couldn't get mine, and I was really getting frustrated. And I guess it was showing on my face as I was getting more and more annoyed pushing the button on my phone. Can you imagine pushing the button on your phone 20 times and it won't go through? Which is uncharacteristic for Lieutenant Joe. I don't normally get myself upset like that, but I did. And I was frustrated and annoyed, and I was hot and sweaty. I wanted to get to my room, right? And the line was absurd. And there was a little kiosk desk, a concierge desk, and there was two young men there. And this young man named Severio was there. And Severio saw me and says, "Sir, can I help you?" And I turned around, and I got to say, inappropriately, I barked at him. I said, "Can you help me? I don't know. This stupid hotel, you sent me this app, and it doesn't work. I'm pushing the button 20 times. It's not working. I'm really annoyed here." And he says, "Sir, I'm here to help you. Let me help you." Well, this young man was so professional and so nice, and I shouldn't have barked at him. I was completely wrong to bark at him. Who the hell am I to bark at somebody who's working, right? And I wasn't really barking at him. I was just more frustrated with the stupid app, and he happened to be standing there. So I apologized immediately. You know, I realized I'm completely wrong, and I apologize. It's Severio. I'm very, very sorry. I don't mean to bark at you. I am just really tired. I'm hot, and I'm frustrated. He goes, "Come over. Let me help you." So I come over. He said, "Don't worry about the app. I'm sorry that the app's not working." He checked me in right there at the concierge desk. I didn't have to go in the line. He gave me my keys. He called the guy over to carry my stuff to my room for me. He was an awesome professional. So I was pleased by that. I couldn't believe how great that was. I got to my room. The room is absolutely gorgeous. It is an unbelievable giant room. And it was $100 for the night. That's it, $100. It overlooks the ocean. The sunrise the next morning was in my window. I'm telling you, I was shocked because I'm so anti-Atlantic City for coming to spend money. But this place was great. To top it off, my partner and I go downstairs to have a drink. They gave us really, really good drinks and food at unbelievably great prices. I could not believe it. It was like almost worth being there. It was my point. So I'm not doing a commercial for Atlantic City or for the Ocean Resort. I'm simply saying I see that they're trying to get better. Now, maybe it's because of the pandemic. I don't know. It could be. It couldn't be. But that's where I've been the last couple days, trying to help people be safe and telling you a little bit about Atlantic City. When we come back, we're going to talk all about the potential world war, our government, COVID, and what people are doing. This is Lieutenant Joe. We'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfolger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Dr. Vladimir Zelenko knows a thing or two about the immune system. He was nominated for a Nobel Prize for his early COVID-19 treatments, and now he's offering his Z-Stack supplements to our listeners at a discount. Just go to zstacklife.com/freedom. That's zstacklife.com/freedom.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chasing Justice with Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here, your host. Glad to be here with you. All right, so in our first segment there, I was telling you all about my experience in Atlantic City. I hope it comes back because it's convenient, it's easy to get to, and the places were really great. And I do want to send a shout out to Severio, who was an excellent professional young man, and that was refreshing, right? How many times do we deal with people in stores and places and people are not professional? So I did go to his boss. And tell her what a great young man he was. I did say what a jerk I was for the way I was behaving, and that he was professional and he turned the whole situation around. So I'm really happy that I had that opportunity to do the right thing, and he did the right thing. He really helped me. So thank you, Severio, if you're out there listening. Now, you know, when my blood pressure goes up, you know, my blood pressure goes up and there's a potential to get sick, and you say, oh, what am I going to do is with this COVID? Am I going to get the COVID? Am I not going to get the COVID? Well, I'll tell you, there's a company called Healthy Cell, and we see them here on the network, right? And they have a product called Immune Boost that I've been taking for a while, and I'm telling you, it has really, really helped me. I'm not going to go on and on about it, but I am more convinced week after week since I've been taking this Healthy Cell Immune Boost product. It's like a little gel in a packet. You can mix it with water, or I just squeeze it right into the mouth, and I drink it right down because it's like a gel and it's flavored. I think it's blackberry. I can't tell you the difference in getting through this winter, which I normally get lots of sinus infections and stuff. I don't know why. God knows why I get sinus infections. But nothing this year. I'm blasted right through this winter and through the fall like it was nothing. And the only thing I've done different than in the last 20 years of my life is taking this Immune Boost from Healthy Cell. So they're on the network. If you hear about it and you're looking for something, give it a try. It's lots of vitamins, lots of good stuff in there. I'm really convinced that that's what's doing it for me. So I just want to mention that to you. All right, listen. So we see, are we on the verge of World War III? That's the question. And I leave that hanging there so I can have a sip of my coffee. And they say, you know, that's not professional. You're a radio guy. I know, but here I am spending time with you, and I bet some of you are drinking your coffee or soda pop or a glass of water or something. We're having a conversation. That's what we do here on Chasing Justice. We talk about things. We ask questions. So when we see this potential for World War III, what's going on in Ukraine, between Russia, Ukraine, and now we see that Belarus might be mounting troops, and they're associated with Russia. They're allied with Russia. They're putting troops on their border with Ukraine that maybe they might attack. I don't know. It could or couldn't happen. I'm hearing reports of this, that, and the other thing. When we see what's happening in Ukraine, it is shocking to the senses. When we see the useless United Nations doing nothing here in the face of a free country. Now listen, I guess we got to deal with that first off the bat. Is Ukraine a democratic free country? We hear all kinds of different stories. We hear that they're free, but that their government is extremely corrupt. We hear that they're free, but the elections are not right. We hear that they're free, but the government shuts down opposition newspapers. The government shuts down opposition political figures, but they're free, but they're free, but they're free. There's different commentators that you can hear out there when they talk about Ukraine. Is it in a vital United States interest? So here's where the interest came to me as I'm watching these horrific scenes that we're seeing on television. Absolutely, unbelievably horrifying when they're they're shooting missiles and rockets and mortars and airplanes dropping weapons on maternity hospitals, when they're dropping them on apartments where people live, when they're shooting up buses where people are trying to flee, you know, the safety corridor that was created, and they start shooting that up, and they're killing, apparently, thousands of innocent civilians. It is a shock to the senses, because you would think that there's no way a major country in the world could do this without the whole world clamping down on it. And we see the comparisons to the start of World War II and the start of World War I, and we see all that because it could easily drag these other European countries in. But the horrors that we see on the screen, if they don't move you, then I would have to ask you to look deeper in the mirror and not the TV and say, what's wrong with me? How can I see women and children fleeing, elderly people fleeing their homes that are bombed out? And they did nothing. They didn't attack Russia. They didn't go after Russia. They did nothing. They were going about their lives in whatever kind of freedom that they have there. The bottom line is the people in Ukraine do not want to be a part of a new Soviet Union. They do not want to come under the control of a communist government led by, Vladimir Putin. They want no part of it. They want to be safe, and they want to be free, right? So they want to join the rest of free Europe, and that's why there was a concern that they were asking to be a part of NATO. You know, I want to be a part of NATO so that I have all these people backing me up should these Russians want to take over and start up a new Soviet Union again, right? Because that communism doesn't go away. Communism is aggressive. Communism is a negative force in the world, just like socialism. It's very, very dangerous. Right, so any kind of freedom is better than any of those forms of government. And that's what these people apparently want. They're going about their business. And we see Russia, led by Putin, who has now revealed himself for who he is. He is a dictator. He is a murderer. He is a war criminal. He is a dangerous, dangerous man to world peace. And he could potentially fire nuclear weapons at people, including the United States, our allies, and innocent people around the world. This guy could light the flame of death in a war that we have never seen before. It's that serious. It is that serious. We're seeing a reshuffling of the entire world. We're seeing changes in our world. And I'm not going to say it's brought on by the pandemic. The pandemic is one of the symptoms of it. But this is extremely serious, what's happening here. Now, we have to look and say, is Ukraine a vital interest of the United States? And we talked about this in a previous episode. Here's why I'm trying to chop this up. Because we may end up in a hot war with Russia, and other countries might jump in. That's how it happens. You know, allies start to develop, and then you're going to help this way. China. Is China going to jump in and now start attacking American assets in the Pacific? Is Hawaii under threat again, except this time from the Chinese, right? Is the Pacific coast of the United States under threat from the Chinese? We say, oh, it's impossible. That'll never happen. Well, it's happened before. And the reality is, if you look at any situation and say, if it's happened once, the chances of it happening again are much greater than if it never happened at all. And we know the world has gone into world war with the same kinds of players every time, right? There's always people who want to be aggressive, who are either totalitarian or communist, and they want to take over their neighbors and other parts of the world. Well, we have the Chinese who are communists. We have fascists in Russia with Putin, who's now revealed himself as that. He was not just a guy, a good leader for Russia. He's been biding his time, and now he's starting to take over other parts of the countries that he believes are his personal domain. We're seeing him shut down his own country. The Iron Curtain could fall again over Russia. They've cut off their internet. They've cut off their newspapers. They're putting newspaper people in jail if you write anything that's negative about the regime or about the army and what they're doing in Ukraine. You go to jail. So this is the kind of evil that we're facing once again in the world for real. And it's building and building and building. So when we see what's happening in Ukraine, and we see innocent people, men, women, and children, being murdered, and they are being murdered, It's one thing if I pull a knife on you and I'm going to hurt you and you happen to have a gun and you shoot me. That's not murder. That's a homicide, but that's a justifiable homicide. You're protecting yourself. These people in Ukraine, they didn't do anything. All they wanted to do was join NATO to make sure that a thing like what's happening right now couldn't happen to them. And that was too much of a threat for Putin. Now, we hear this argument back and forth, even amongst conservative pundits and talk show hosts and people that we listen to get information from. There's accusations like, I like Tucker Carlson. I do like him. I think he's an amazing young man. I think he really tries to lay things out. I have some disagreements with him sometimes, the way he says certain things. I'm thinking maybe he's leaving something out purposely or inadvertently. But he's a very, very smart guy. And his opinion has really come under fire. They're saying he is a Putin supporter. He's trying to back Putin. And he's really not. He's not trying to say he backs Putin and he wants to have Putin do what he's doing. That's not true. That's a lie. That's false information. I listen to the guy a lot. And what he is saying is that, is there an American interest for Americans to spend billions of dollars and send our children to die in Europe once again? And that's what it comes down to, sending our children to die in Europe once again over Ukraine. Or is this a problem that, as unfortunate as it is, the Ukrainians have to deal with? We can give them supplies, we can help them out, but to send people there, our people, our children, my 18-year-old son, to go there, is that something that we should do? And because he's raising that question, and the media has made up its mind that, you know, unless you are 100% in for war and going there and fighting, sending American troops, then you are a Putin supporter and you're a bad person. But the question has got to be discussed. We have to think about it. So that's where I'm starting this, you know. What do we do here? We're watching an ostensibly free people being butchered and slaughtered by a major world power. And we're watching women, children, men being killed, babies in a maternity ward being bombed. And we're sitting back and watching this because we don't want to get involved. And our initial pull, of course, is to get involved, to stop the evil before it goes further. But if we do that, it will certainly spark further conflict. It will certainly involve us in a much deeper war. So I guess the moral question here is, do we allow the people of Ukraine to suffer and be overcome and snuffed out and dragged back into the Soviet Union, kicking and screaming, never to be heard of again? Or do we take some kind of action to protect innocent people? See, that's what this comes down to. It's not a political thing. It's they are innocent people who need help. Do we help them at our own peril? So where is that line that we draw? Where are you willing to send your 18-year-old son to go die? To help people we don't know that have no real interest here in America, right? It's very sad to see, but I don't know if I want my son to die for it. Now, maybe that's the wrong way for me to look at it. But it's not like the United States is being attacked. The United States is being directly attacked or threatened, and we have to send our military to protect us and our specific interests in America, protect our families, our way of life. Then, my 18-year-old son, I would not be happy that he would have to go out and fight that conflict, but that is the contract we have with freedom and liberty to each other here in America, is that if the United States comes under attack, we will all do whatever we can at wherever we are in life, at whatever age point we are, to do what we can to fend off an attacking force and protect our way of life, our families, our Constitution, and our country. That is what we all know we have to do. And if that was the case, like in World War II when we were attacked, and we had the Axis powers attacking and, you know, attacking Pearl Harbor and coming after America, and we knew that eventually we could end up in a big war right here in the United States. We were fighting for freedom. Then sending our sons and daughters off to maybe sacrifice their lives for that greater good was something we accepted. Didn't like it, but we accepted it. And I would say I'm in that exact same position. I wouldn't want any of my children to go and die on a foreign battlefield. I wouldn't want it. I would never want that. But I would understand that if there was an American interest, that our families were in danger here, if somebody was doing to us what they're doing to Ukraine, then I think all of us, myself included, would pick up a weapon and go fight for our country. And I would fully well accept that contract with our country, that my son, my daughter may have to go and fight for protection. That's just the way it is. But that's under completely different circumstances. In this circumstance, if Ukraine is wiped out tomorrow and all those people are killed, every one of them, they kill every Ukrainian that they can find, and Putin takes over all of Ukraine, puts up a big wall, nobody can get in, and that's the end of it. That doesn't affect me really in any way. It doesn't really affect me in any way other than I watched a horrific thing take place and I did nothing about it. Now that's something we'd have to live with then. See, we're a good country. We're good people. When we see those scenes of violence, it stirs us up in our heart and we want to strike back because we strike back at evil. And what we're seeing is, make no doubt about it, it is evil what this guy is doing. This dictator, this person to decide he has a military and he's bigger and stronger than weak people and he's going to attack them and blow them up and take theirs. Whatever they got is now his and he's going to go take it. This is nothing short of evil and twisted. And the world, have we learned lessons when we see someone like this? What should we do early on? Well, that's always the problem, isn't it? When we see them early on, they announce themselves. We say, we should react right away. We should do something right now. We should fight back and take him out. Well, that's one thing. Excuse me. When we see a country that we can beat easily. Russia has nuclear weapons. That if we entered into this situation where we tried to take out Putin or take out Moscow or try and shut them down or go after the Russians, it is very, very reasonable to think that at that point, he would light off a nuclear weapon, either in Europe or aim it at us, then we would have to fire back. And that is the nightmare scenario, because nightmare scenarios come up when we have these kind of people in the world and we don't recognize the signs and take action early. But we can't. We can't really take action early because we don't get along. We fight over nonsense. We argue over our Western partners argue over nonsense. Look how the world went out of their minds when President Trump said to NATO, all you NATO countries, you're not paying your fair share. United States is not here to save all of you again at our cost. You have to cough up. Oh my God, he's ruining relations. No, why didn't they do their fair share the right way? I mean, all these people in our country screaming about fair share all the time, do your fair share. How come these NATO countries weren't doing their fair share all along? Why did he have to say something? And then to turn around and get upset. How could he talk to our allies like that? Our allies should be kissing our butts. How many times can we go there and save them at the cost of our children, our treasure, our blood soaked into the soil of Europe? How many times? That's the question. Why are they not paying to make this up? Why are they not having very, very aggressive plans to make NATO as strong as it can be? And now we're seeing NATO might not actually work after all of this. Somebody might not be able to get the guts together to fight. What if they go into Poland? What if they don't go into Poland, but what if they launch some rounds into Poland and hit some apartment buildings in Poland? What if they hit a maternity ward in Poland, a NATO member? Is NATO then going to strike back? Are we then going to fly jets over there and shut down the Russian military? Are we going to hit Leningrad, Stalingrad, all these Soviet-era communities? We are on the brink of change in our world in such a big, big way that we really need to rethink. I think it caught up to us. It snuck up on us because we're not paying attention in America. You know, one of the things that we see is, you know, why do we seem to be so confused in America? We don't know what we're doing. We're angry at each other. Half of the people hate our country, this and that. Because we have so much abundance here in America. We have so much abundance that we kind of lost track of the fact that we're not the rest of the world. The rest of the world is not America. The rest of the world is still very, very dangerous. We have things going on out there that are historically been going on. The default position of humanity is to live under tyranny. I've said that. If I said it once, I said it 1,000 times. But because we have it so good here in America, we kind of forget that that evil is at the door. That danger is just over the next hill. And instead of being prepared for it, we're arguing amongst ourselves about statues, about how people live their lives. Who the hell cares who loves who? Everybody should love whoever they want to love, and that should be the end of it. We shouldn't even have that conversation anymore. But we do. We argue and we fight over it. What's right and what's wrong? You do what you do, I do what I do. Everybody leave each other alone. It's these bigger things we should be paying attention to. And we haven't. We haven't been paying attention for years. We haven't seen the signs. We've seen the symptoms. We've seen the Chinese growing in power. We're seeing them threatening. We see that what they do to their own people. And we just stand by and say, well, they're not going to do it with us. They're doing to their own people. You know, the Uyghurs. So they're slaughtering them. So they're imprisoning them. So they're disappearing people that speak out again. That's where the Chinese are. Right? Because it would cause us to have to do something. And we don't want to do it. It's too costly. It's too dangerous. It's too much sacrifice. And I agree. I wouldn't want to send any of our kids to go do anything against these people. Unfortunately, when you don't do that, when you don't have a very strong setup, strong leadership, a strong face, if you don't have a strong military, when you have weak leadership, the evil in the world steps up and does what it does. It sees opportunity and it takes it. If President Xi in China is watching, and he is watching, what's happening in with Russia and Ukraine, and how the United States is doing everything it can to bend over backwards and say, we're not going in, we're not sending in troops, we're not fighting, we're not doing it, we'll send in some guns, but we're not doing anything else. No, we're not, no, we're out, we're out, we're out, we're out. Basically, all we're saying is, go ahead, Mr. Putin, slaughter those people, go on in there. But we're not going to fight you. We're going to yell at you, and we're going to take your money, but we're certainly not going to stop you. What does President Xi see when he sees that? Well, if I want to roll over Taiwan, I pretty much can just send my army there now, because the United States is certainly not going to come across the globe to fight me over Taiwan. And then that's where people who have ambitions like Xi and like Putin see weakness as an opportunity to act. Because you know what? We might not have Joe Biden next. He might get elected out of office. We might have a Republican Congress. We might have people who will fight back. So therefore, take the advantage while you can. And the moment is now. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it all over the world. We're seeing the relations problem, that weak leadership, improper leadership, what the problems are causing. They were saying the other day on one of these financial reports, and this is a big thing. It's bigger than, nobody's talking about it, but it is a very, very big thing. That the Chinese are speaking with Saudi Arabia and some other oil countries to use the Chinese dollar in place of the American dollar as the standard by which they do their trading. When the American dollar disappears as the standard for the world, then American value is going to disappear. The value of the American dollar is propped up by the fact that it is used as a world currency. When the petro companies, the oil countries out there, decide they're not going to deal in dollars anymore, they're going to deal in Chinese money, that's going to change the balance of power in the world almost overnight, and it's going to devalue many, many things that we here in America count on every day, like our health care, our ability to borrow so that we can do the things we do, so we can have the strongest military in the world. This is a big deal that's happening right in front of us. And the only reason it's happening is because of weakness. And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that people got themselves caught up so much in the anti-Trump movement, the fear that he was going to come in and attack the LGBTQ community and make them take classes so they wouldn't be LGBTQ anymore, that they had to hate him for that. He didn't do any of that. There's no concentration camps he put into it did to anybody, right? They were worried about that. I had a friend of mine who is among that community, and he called me up. He was so upset and so scared to death that he was going to be rounded up and forced to change his lifestyle. And no matter what I said to him, it didn't matter. No matter how outrageous that sounded that somebody would do that, he believed 100% that that's what Trump was going to do. And that's what all of these groups that have all of these different missions in life, whatever they stand for, thought Trump was going to come in and come after them and destroy them. And we can't have the orange man and his tweets and his making people do what they're supposed to do. So instead, we have Joe Biden. And Joe Biden is a weak president. And weakness is what the rest of the world sees. The rest of the world doesn't see, oh, how good it is that we're going to get rid of oil as our fuel, and we're going to have electric cars, and we're going to have windmills, and it's going to be so wonderful. The rest of the world don't see that. The rest of the world sees opportunity and a moment to strike, to do the things they want to do that America kept them from doing. And most of those things are negative things, right? When we look at putting NATO, making Ukraine part of NATO, and Putin saying, well, I can't have that because I can't have the enemy right at my door. I need a buffer zone, which is what he's saying. And you say, okay, that can make some sense. I could understand. I wouldn't want, you know, Russian troops in Mexico. But the difference is that NATO and the Freedom West are not going to attack Russia to expand or to take over their land or to go after them. That's not what we do. NATO would be there certainly just to make sure you didn't attack us. And we're not saying that either. We're not saying it out loud. It's not politically correct to say there's a difference. Well, there is difference. The Western countries, our freedom, our liberties are the most important. We are not expansionists. We're not looking to take over anything. Socialists and communists are always looking to take over, destroy, and change the nature of relationships. And that's where we are today. That's what we're seeing happening in front of us, minute by minute. And watching the Ukraine people suffer and die, and no one helping them, is something we're going to have to live with for a very, very long time. Because it could be the start of something that comes to our door, or it's just going to be a memory that's going to haunt us for a very, very long time. So I didn't want this to be a down show, but I gave you a lot to think about. As a people, we have to decide, what are we willing to sacrifice for? What are we willing to stand up for? And how are we going to go forward in a world that is now reacting to weakness? Elections matter, ladies and gentlemen. Vote for strength. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We'll see you next time on Chasing Justice.